नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
योगतः योगयुक्तो मुनिर्ब्रह्मा न चिरेणाधिगच्छति। अमृतगंधी ट्रांसलेशन। एंड इन द Prabhupada explains very beautifully about how even among sannyasis, the Vaishnava sannyasis and Mayavada sannyasis, there is a gulf of difference between the two. Vaishnava sannyasis are called as tridanda sannyasis. They carry tridanda. Tridanda means there are three sticks inside their danda. What do they represent? Karmana, manasa, dhira. By words, by mind and by action, they are surrendering everything to Krishna. So you must have seen how sannyasi, when they offer obeisances, they touch the ground with the stick first and then they offer obeisances. So this is the meaning of tridanda sannyasi. Tridanda sannyasi offers his mind, words and action, everything to Krishna service. Whereas Mayavadi is called as ekadanda sannyasi. And what does that one stick represent? Everything is one. I am God, you are God, everything is only one. This is their understanding. So this is one very essential difference. Similarly, the ekadandi sannyasis or mayavadis are impersonalists. They study Sankhya Yoga and the Vedanta. This is their main subject of study. Whereas Vaishnava sannyasis study Srimad Bhagavatam. So in Vedanta, there are many aphorisms given. Janma adhyasayata atato brahma jignyasa anandamayo abhyasa raso vaisaha. Like that, there are very brief aphorisms given in the Vedanta Sutra. And these brief aphorisms are very difficult to understand. Every one of them have a very, very deep purport. One can write one book on each of the aphorisms. They are carrying so much of depth of knowledge. So the Vedantists who discuss these aphorisms, they have a lot of room for speculation. Because the aphorism is very brief and it doesn't convey much. And they try to stretch their brain to give explanation to the aphorisms. And in this way, end up giving some speculative treatise on Vedanta. When Vyasadeva wrote this Vedanta Sutra, he understood that it is very difficult for common man to follow. Because, for example, rasa vai saha, it says, rasaha vai saha means, saha is he. That supreme absolute truth is full of transcendental mellows. That's how he has explained. How? He doesn't explain. Vedanta just says rasa vai saha or anandamaya abhyasa. The absolute truth has expanded to increase his pleasure. Atato brahma jigyasa. Therefore you should do inquiry about the absolute truth. So very brief statements. So realizing that a common man cannot understand these brief statements, Vyasadeva himself wrote a commentary to the Vedanta Sutra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam is an elaborate commentary of Vedanta Sutra. So anybody can understand Srimad Bhagavatam because it's a commentary written by Vyasadeva for the benefit of everyone. Now, who can give the best commentary for a book? Can anybody give a better commentary than the author himself? Isn't it? Like Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami wrote a book. This is the Brihad Bhagavatam book. And he gave his own commentary to that. So which can be the better commentary than his own commentary? Similarly, Vyasadeva wrote Vedanta Sutra and then gave commentary himself so that people can understand easily. Just like in a court, sometimes they have the laws. Is there any LLB or LLM here? students? They memorize, like we memorize theorems in the mathematics or in any other subject. Theorems are very tough to memorize because they carry very dry words and you are trying to cram them into your head and it is very difficult. Similarly, law also is very, very difficult to memorize. So in order to make the law easily understandable, they give an example. There was one man called as Ram and he had a neighbor. Neighbor called so and so. So they give two people and they both, this man gave the money to that man. That man was not ready to return after some time. So what should the law do for such a case? So they give an example. From that example, it is very easy for you to understand the theorem. And then again, you go back to the theorem, you can very easily memorize it. You all know about it? Any of you who have done accountancy, commerce also, you must have read similar things. So the illustration makes the whole thing very easy and simple to understand. Similarly, the Shruti mantras or the Vedanta gives very tough aphorisms which are difficult to digest for a common man. But the Puranas talk of the histories of the Lord when he comes to this material world. Itihasa means history. Itihasa doesn't mean mythology. Mythology means imagination. Something like what H.G. Wells or Jules Verne, they write many books on fiction, scientific fiction. So that is mythology. When we talk of itihasa, itihasa is actually a reality and it is a history. So the histories are produced and they are very, very connected to this Vedanta. Like I was telling the statement, Raso Vai Saha. The common man cannot understand. But you read the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how the Lord is Raso Vai Saha, you will understand. How he is the reservoir of all transcendental mellows. One can very easily appreciate the fact. So, this Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas are practical demonstration of the Vedanta Sutra. And Vedanta is a dry theory. So which is easy? Naturally the Puranas are much easy to understand and they are very easy for anyone to understand, appreciate and put it in one's life. So Vaishnavas read the Srimad Bhagavatam and Mayavadis and impersonalists have no other engagement besides this Swadhyaya or learning the Vedanta. They constantly are stretching their brain to understand neti, neti, neti process. This truth, this. This is Sat and this is Asat. They are constantly trying to discriminate by reading various Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. And because of such a dry study, sometimes they become very bored because of such a study. Then they try to return back to Srimad Bhagavatam. And they are trying to read Bhagavatam also with the same speculative attitude. Can they understand anything? They cannot. Srimad Bhagavatam has to be heard from the mouth of a pure devotee. Otherwise, Srimad Bhagavatam will not be of any help. Because Krishna reciprocates according to the candidate who surrenders to him. In whatever mood he surrenders, Krishna reciprocates. So they try to read Bhagavatam and there also they try to speculate with all their imagination. So they don't derive much benefit. Again they go back to Vedanta. And in this way, they are shuttling between the two. They really do not know what to do. So they don't have any other engagement other than this kind of reading Vedanta. Whereas Vaishnava devotees have varieties of engagements. Like even Vaishnava sannyasi, he establishes big temples where he establishes Radha and Krishna and he invites hundreds and thousands of people to visit the temple and he establishes the Pancharatriki rules by which the deities are bathed every day, they are dressed with fresh dresses and they are offered bhoga and then there are so many rules to offer the aarti, lamp, incense sticks and the temple has to be maintained and the Lord can be served so beautifully. You can offer obeisances, you can do dandavat parikrama. And also a Vaishnava sannyasi worships the tulasi and he recites Bhagavatam not only for his own benefit but he gives classes to others' benefit. And in this way a Vaishnava sannyasi is far different from a Mayavadi sannyasi. Because a Vaishnava sannyasi enunciate is called as a nitya sannyasi, whereas Mayavadi sannyasi is called as karma sannyasi. So karma sannyasi and nitya sannyasi, how do they differ? The karma sannyasi has given up all karma and he is going to a secluded place like Himalayas, only to read Vedanta and lead a very dry life. He is a karma sannyasi because he has given up the karma. And nitya sannyasi is, as Krishna explains, Yetu sarvani karmani mayi sannyasya matparaha ananjayaneva yogena maam dhyayanta upasati. Teshamaham samudharta amritya samsara sagarat bhavami nachirapartha mayyadeshya chetasam. Krishna explains satya sannyasi in these two verses. Yetu sarvani karmani ஏது சர்வாணி கர்மாணி மயி சந்நியாசா. He does sannyas. How? By offering all his activities, words and his mind in Krishna service. He is a Nitya Sannyasi. So he has a very good engagement. Like Nitya Sannyasi may organize a big Ratayatra festival and he becomes completely engaged in varieties of arrangements. So Satya Sannyasi lives in the midst of society. He doesn't run away to the Himalayas. He lives in the midst of society. So we will be reading eventually in the next set of verses, 7th to 12th, how such a person acts, how such a karmayogi acts. In that you will understand more clearly how such a person's life is fully colorful, although he is renounced. So as we were explaining last time also, even a person is a karma sannyasi, having given up all activities, he has no other alternative other than to fall down to philanthropic activities. As we were saying, he may build schools, he may build hospitals, and he may be doing some social service completely in forgetfulness of God. Whereas a Nitya Sannyasi, namely Vaishnava Sannyasi, even in the midst of society, even in the midst of all kinds of people, he will never become entangled. He can always remain Krishna conscious. So such a person, or a Mayavadi or impersonalist, ultimately comes to knowledge. Sometimes Mayavadis have a wrong notion. They say that this bhakti, you know, it's meant for people of heart, and jnana is meant for people of head. You heard this? People say bhakti is meant for people of heart, jnana is meant for people of head. As if bhaktas have no head. This is their understanding. But actually Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanamante Jnanavan Aam Prapadyate. Such a jnani, after many many lifetimes, ultimately he surrenders to me. With what understanding? Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudarlabha. Understanding that Lord Vasudeva is all that is, such a great soul is very rare. So Krishna clearly says that one who is a jnani, he takes many many lifetimes roaming in the Himalayas, finally he becomes a devotee. And then he surrenders everything, realizing that Vasudeva is all that is. Samahatma Sudarlabha, such a great soul is very rare. Whereas a bhakta is already situated in that platform of Vasudeva. He is a devotee of Lord Vasudeva and he is executing all activities, surrendering. So devotees, of course, they also gather knowledge. But that knowledge is called as Ahetuka Jnana. The knowledge with which one can render undivided, unalloyed devotional service. That is the knowledge. Not the dry knowledge of speculation with which one is speculating whether God is impersonal or personal, or God exists or not. Devotees have no such doubts. They simply surrender to the authority and achieve knowledge about Ahaituki Bhakti. So we can see throughout Bhagavad Gita in many occasions there is a discussion between Krishna and Arjuna about impersonalist and a personalist. A personalist is a bhakta who understands that the absolute truth is not just impersonal Brahman. Absolute truth is impersonal and much more than that. Just like you are living in India and there is government of India which is controlling you, is it not? Are we all not controlled by government of India? We are controlled. But what is government of India? If you see, what is government of India? Is it impersonal, something like air? Yes. The government of India is managed by a board of many, many people. And ultimately, this entire board is run by one Prime Minister. Is it not? So that Prime Minister of India represents the government. So the government may be impersonal, but behind that impersonal government, there is a Prime Minister. Just like if you go to telco company, in every department, everyone will know about Tata. But you cannot expect Tata to be sitting in every department or in the lathe. But everyone knows that this is Tata's company. So Tata is the ultimate person in any Tata company. In the same way, the Supreme Lord is impersonal at one platform, but beyond that he is also personal. Just like if you see a moving screen, if you see a moving illusion on a screen, it is all coming from the light rays. Somebody may only see the light rays and say, this impersonal light ray is what that produces this movie on the screen. But behind that impersonal light, there is a projector. But behind that projector, there is a man, there is a person standing and operating the projector. So ultimately, behind everything there is a person. And there is nothing in this world which is not personal. Even every two grains of sand, they don't have the same orientation. Two same people don't have the same characteristics. Even twins, they are born with different qualities. You have seen that? They may look alike, twins, but when you go and examine their qualities, you will see they have completely opposite qualities. Isn't it? Kaushal and Karthik. Actually, Kaushal and Karthik initially had difficulty to recognize them. Later, after talking with them for some time, you will come to know how they have different qualities, even amongst twins. So, everything in this world is unique and personal. When the emanation is personal, how can the source be impersonal? So it cannot be impersonal. So Krishna says in the 14th chapter, last verse, that he is the source of impersonal Brahman. Just like the bulb is situated in one place, but from the bulb is emanating impersonal light that is pervading the entire room. So that is impersonal. But how is the impersonal light coming? From a personal bulb. Similarly, Krishna is personal and his bodily effulgence is impersonal, which is called as Brahma Jyoti. That is clearly explained in all the, even the Upanishads also. So the Jnani's conclusion that the ultimate truth is only impersonal and it is not personal, it is a wrong conclusion. So the real understanding is Vadantita Tattvavidah Tattvam Vijnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaneti Shabdate. Initially the Lord is understood as Brahman, impersonal, and beyond that he is understood as Paramatma, the personal form of Paramatma, Vishnu form, and beyond that he is understood as Bhagavan, as Krishna. Just like one sees a mountain from a distance, it appears very hazy. When you go a little closer, you see the trees. When you go much closer, you find living beings like cows, calves, people moving up and down. You see everything. In the same way, initially Brahman is the hazy understanding of the Absolute Truth, because the Lord appears to be having no form. When you go closer, you take a closer look, you understand the personality of Paramatma, super soul seated in everyone's heart, along by the side of the soul. Then one understands Bhagavan, or the personality of Krishna, who is the embodiment of love. So, this is the correct understanding. So, the path of bhakti does not depend on anything. It is completely independent. Whereas the path of Sankhyavadis or Jnanis, that takes the assistance of bhakti for its even mere survival. That is why sometimes when Mayavadis go to Himalayas, notwithstanding the difficulties, they return back. And then sometimes they also do bhakti. They see the bhaktas and they say, oh, bhaktas are so happy. They are wearing tilak, kantimala, chanting, dancing. How are these people so happy? So even the Mayavadis appreciate the path of bhakti. That's why some Mayavadis, they have a slogan, Chaitanya Pat Shankaramat. They say Chaitanya Path means they like the path of Lord Chaitanya, singing, dancing, glorifying the Lord's name, waking up every morning, constantly absorbed in Krishna's thoughts. They like this path very much. But what is their mat opinion? They want Advaita. They want to merge into Brahman. They say, now we will do all these things, ultimately we want to go to Brahma Jyoti and remain in peace. So this is their understanding. But that will not last long, because if you are duplicitous, very soon you will be detected. Lord is the most intelligent personality. Can you not detect our duplicity? If a dobi goes to a king and says, I have come to wash your clothes, and then from the clothes he removes a knife and tries to stab the king and says, my dear king, you get down, I want to sit in your place. So this is the nature of Mayavadis. They say, oh God, I am worshipping you, I want to pray you, I want to pray to you, I want to worship your lotus feet. They bow down. And then what they say? Oh, get out of your post, I want to become God. This is their understanding. So anybody who wants to merge into God or wanting to become God, how can they explain the favor of God? One time Prabhupada was saying, God is very intelligent and why should he encourage a competitor? He knows you are a competitor to his post, why should he encourage him? Very playfully Prabhupada said, but even if one competes with Krishna also, they can never become Krishna. So Prabhupada would attack this type of question in various ways. So we can show practically how dry renunciates sometimes have become very great devotees. See how you turn into a devotee. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a very great smart brahmana who was living in Jagannath Puri, and he was a pujari in Jagannath Puri. He was a head. So when he was living in Puri, as you all know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Katwa He shaved up his hair, he took sannyas, and then he wanted to go to Vrindavan. He was misdirected to Shantipur, and later on he came running to Jagannath Puri to have a beautiful darshan of Lord Jagannath. Lord Jagannath, as you all know, is Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra. With their broad eyes, they show how they are anxious to meet their devotees. That's how the Lord Jagannath's big eyes, that's what they represent. They are very, very eager to meet their loving devotees. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ran to the temple of Lord Jagannath. Even today, if you go to Jagannath Puri, you will find a deity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with arms raised running towards Lord Jagannath. It is kept near the seashore. So when he ran to the temple, he was so much absorbed in transcendental ecstasy that as soon as he entered the Sanctum Sanctorum, very close to that, he fell unconscious. And all the actions in his body stopped completely. And the local pandas there, they thought, this is some sahajya or some cheater. So they brought big sticks to beat him and throw him out of the temple. In the meantime, Sarvamatacharya came. Then he appears to be a beautiful sannyasi. Let me see, who is it? Then he kept a swab of cotton near his nose. And he could immediately understand that this personality is experiencing the greatest extent and the 8 ecstatic symptoms, Ashtavikara as you call it, to manifest in the body of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he told the pandas, I will tear off him. Then it was taken to his house, and later on he sprinkled the water, tried to move him, nothing wake him up. Until Lord Nityananda along with other associates, they all came to Jagannath Puri temple and they came to know the news and their Akasharya, and they found that beautiful Lord lying unconscious. Technique, we all loved it.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
The Lord jumped from his bed, hearing the holy name. This is the only thing that could wake him up. And Lord Chaitanya expressed his deep gratitude to Sarva Bhattacharya and felt he should serve him in some way. So Sarva Bhattacharya told him, oh Lord Chaitanya, you look so young and so beautiful. You are such a young sannyasi that there is a great likelihood of your falling down if you do not hear Vedanta. Because the Vedanta, sorry, Mayavadi sannyasis have to hear Vedanta and become fixed in the absolute truth. Otherwise, there is a great likelihood of falling down to the mundane action. So seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he felt a great fear that you are so young looking and you are so beautiful that at any time you can become a prey, you know, to Maya. So you should hear Vedanta, it is important. So I am a logician and I am a great scholar of grammar, Sanskrit grammar also. So I will teach you Vedanta and you hear. And Mahaprabhu took a very humble role. He said, okay, I'll hear from you. So Sarvamatacharya gave him a higher asana because he was a sannyasi, and he sat at a lower platform and started speaking Vedanta. So day after day, he was hours and hours speaking Vedanta for 7 full days. After which Sarvama asked him, what is it, anything? Are you understanding anything? Are you not understanding anything? Or you appreciate my understanding about Vedanta? You are not making any comments to me. Lord Chaitanya said, I am a fool. I do not know Vedanta. Because you told me I should hear from you, I am simply hearing from you. As far as the Vedanta is concerned, it's like a bright sun in the sky. But your conclusions are like a cloud that is covering the real meaning of Vedanta, he said. And Sarvam Bhattacharya became very angry. He said, how do you say that my explanation is wrong for Vedanta? For years and years I have been teaching hundreds of students on Vedanta, and they understood the meaning and they have become great scholars today. How do you say my conclusions are wrong? If you have a better conclusion, you speak it. Then Lord Chaitanya began to address. He explained how the real meaning of Vedanta is that it represents the Supreme Personality of Godhead and not impersonal Brahman. He quoted very vividly from various Upanishads. He said from Aitri Upanishad, he quoted the very first verse of Aitri Upanishad says, Saha Ekshataha, the Supreme Lord glanced, which says, how can the Lord glance without eyes? So he quoted from Mundaka Upanishad about how there are two birds sitting in a tree, one represents Paramatma, one represents Jivatma. So he explained about that. Similarly, he quoted from Ishopanishad, saying how Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasya Abhihitam Mukam, the devotee prays, O Lord, you are beautiful face is covered by the dazzling effulgence of Brahman, and I am unable to behold your beautiful face. Please kindly remove this Brahma Jyoti from your face so that I can behold your beauty. So he quoted vividly from Upanishads, explaining how Upanishads are often misunderstood by impersonalists due to lack of surrender on their part. Because sometimes Upanishads explain that Lord has no material hands, but still he accepts our offerings. The Lord has no material legs, still he walks. The Lord has no material ears, but he hears everything that everyone speaks. Similarly, the Lord can do everything. He can accomplish everything, although he doesn't have a material form. What does that mean? Not having a material form does not deny a spiritual form. Not having a material form means Lord has a spiritual form. The beautiful form of Krishna, we say, it's a Satchidananda form. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very beautifully explained all these things to Sarvam Bhattacharya. And Sarvam Bhattacharya looked at Mahaprabhu with an anxious look. Then why did Shankaracharya preach impersonalism? So in relation to that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted from the Puranas a discussion between Lord Shiva and Parvati, where Lord Shiva says that in Kali Yuga, Mayi Kalpitam Devi Karo Brahmana Murtina. He says, Maya Vadam Asat Shastram Prachannam Bodhyamuchate Mayi Kalpitam Devi Karo Brahmana Murtina. He said, my dear Parvati, in the age of Kali Yuga, I will come and preach a particular philosophy called as Mayavad, which will proclaim that the Lord's form is Maya, like any of our forms. It's made of flesh and bones. So, but although I call it Maya, that Shastram is actually Asat Shastram, he said. Mayavadam, Asat Shastram. Prachannam Bauddham Uchyate. Bauddham means the Buddha religion. Religion of Buddha is atheism, because it doesn't believe in the soul and it doesn't believe in God. So that is called as atheism. So Mayavad is called as a Prachannam Bauddham Uchyate. It's a covered Buddhism. So it's far more dangerous. Which is dangerous? Tiger is dangerous, or a tiger covered with a cow skin is dangerous? That is Mayavad. That's why he says Mayavad Bhashasanada Hoya Sarvanashi says. Simply by hearing Mayavad you will be destroyed. So if a tiger comes from a distance only, you will run away. But a tiger covered with a cow skin can easily bewilder you and cheat you. So that's why he said Prachannam Bauddham Uchyate. And he said Mayi Kalpitam Devi Kalo Brahmana Murtina. I will come in the form of a Brahmana. Who is that Brahmana? Shankaracharya. And I will preach this cheating religion. Of course, Shankaracharya preached his religion of impersonalism, and also he preached the bhakti cult also. He wrote many books like Pandurangashtakam, he wrote Bhajagovindam. Towards the end of his life, he quoted this verse very often. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhaja Mudhamate Samprate Samnihite Kale Nahi Nahi Rakshate Tukringarane. He sang this. Nahi Nahi Rakshate Tukringarane, he said. All your word jugglery of Panini grammar will not help you at the time of death, my dear fools, my disciples, he said. Mudamate. So what should you do? He said, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajamudamate. He said, this is the culmination of all understanding. So this is what the Mayavadis arrive at always. Like if you see, I was telling you the example of a caterpillar which is in a big banyan tree trying to find out the root of the banyan. Can it ever find out? And even if it finds out, there's a lot of endeavor involved in that. That's the directing of the root and what is the root. But they do a lot of endeavor and exercise and ultimately come to the same conclusion after many lifetimes. Bahunam Janmanamante. So Shankaracharya told them, Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajamudamate. So in this way he preached the philosophy of Advaita with the idea of separating the non-devotees from devotees. Because devotees and non-devotees are mixed. Everyone was wearing tilaka and roaming in the name of devotees. So when Shankaracharya came, those who wanted to become enjoyer, those who wanted to become God, they immediately were attracted to the Mayavad philosophy. And they were separated from the assembly of devotees. And devotees could practice pure devotional service very nicely without any mixture. Because Rupa Goswami says, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adi Anavritam. So this is the meaning of Bhakti. So Bhakti Karma Jnana and all should be kicked out. Our Bhakti should be a pure path of surrender. So Shankaracharya came for this specific purpose. So he explained that And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya felt completely defeated. And Mahaprabhu told him, please do not be confused. All the scriptures arrive at the same conclusion. Even in the Upanishad, there is an impersonal explanation in the beginning. But the culmination of all Upanishads is Vishnum Paramam Padam. That's how all Upanishads conclude. But one should achieve the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And he told them, what to speak of ordinary living beings. Even the great Atmaramas are those who are relishing constantly at the platform of soul. Even they are attached to devotional service. He quoted the examples of Sanaka Sanatan, Shukadeva Goswami, and the Chatish Kumaras. They all are constantly absorbing devotional service. How they were impersonalists before and later on they became bhaktas. You all must be knowing the pastime of how the Chatish Kumaras were impersonalists before. But when they went to the doors of Vaikuntha, they smelled the tulasi flower, tulasi aromas which was coming from the lotus feet of Vishnu. Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Pada Aravinda Kinjal Kamishya Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antargatena Antargatasarivarena Chakaratesham Sankshova Maksharadisham Apichitta Tanvo Apichitta Tanvo. There Chitta Tanu, body and their heart, everything was completely overwhelmed with devotion. When they smelled the fragrance of the tulasi leaves that was kept at the lotus feet of Vishnu, they just approached. There they got the smell. And under Gatasabhivarena Chakaratesham, when it entered the nostrils Kumaras, he turned into devotees. So he explained how impersonalists became personal. Shukadeva Goswami also. He was maintaining an impersonalistic view in the beginning, and then he went on to become a great devotee. So much so that he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit, which is the personification of Krishna's bhakti. So with all these examples he explained, and quoted the verse, Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranta Api Rukrame Kruvanti Haitakim Bhaktim Ittam Bhuta Gunohari. Ittam Bhuta Gunohari means Lord Hari's guna or qualities are so wonderful that even Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranta Api Rukrame, even the Atma Ramas who are self-satisfied. See, Atma Ram means one who is satisfied in his own Atma. He doesn't even open his eyes to see what is available in the world. Is there anything for my enjoyment? He has completely given up all his internal cravings for material sense objects. He has become purified completely. And he is relishing on the platform of soul. He is called as a Atmaram. Even such Atmaramas, it says, Bhagavatam says, Atmaramas chamaneha nirgranta, they have become free from all bondages. Api urukrame kurvanti ahaitakim bhaktin, they are attracted to this bhakti of the gopis who are performing ahaitaki bhakti. So they are attracted, even they become lovers of Krishna afterwards. So when he quoted this verse, Sarva Bhattacharya was very pleased and he was overwhelmed with joy. And he requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give explanation to this particular verse, Atma Ramasamya. Mahaprabhu told him, no, you are a very great scholar and you are a great logician. So you give first the explanation and afterwards I will give my explanation. Then Sarva Bhattacharya became very pleased. And he gave 9 different explanations of the same verse. And Mahaprabhu very much appreciated. He said, your explanations to this verse are very nice, but because you are an academic scholar, all your explanations are from an academic point of view. Now here for me, the devotional explanation. Then he split this entire shloka into 11 syllables. Atmanam, Cha, and Muneha, Nirgranta, Api, Urkram, right? That he divided them into 11 words. And with different combination of these words, he arrived at 61 different meanings. Mahaprabhu explained to him. And Sarva Bhattacharya was overwhelmed with joy. He said, you are none other than Lord Sri Krishna, who have come to save me and he protected me. And now I have understood the path of devotion service. He fell flat on the ground, clasping Lord Chaitanya's feet, and wept tears bitterly. And Lord Chaitanya lifted him and embraced him. Then he was touched by Lord Chaitanya's own divine hands. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya felt the intense current of devotion passing through his body and he cried tears of joy and he felt perspiration and all the symptoms were manifest in his body. In this way he fell unconscious. Seeing this, Gopinath Acharya, who was originally very keen to convert this Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya into a devotee, he felt so pleased. He came to Lord Chaitanya and he glorified him that, my Lord, this only by your mercy, that my brother-in-law, who was like a dry cake, even without a drop of oil, he was like a dry cake, now he has become So soft. But Mahaprabhu did not accept the glorification. He said, Gopinatha said, it is because of only your desire that you very intensely desired that your brother-in-law should become a great devotee of Krishna. By the sincere desire of a devotee, the Supreme Lord immediately favors such a desire. And he can convert even a man having a stone-like heart into a flower-like devotee. That's how Sarvam Bhattacharya has become a very great devotee. All glories may go to you. In this way, Mahaprabhu glorified Gopinatha Acharya. And Sarvam Bhattacharya went on to become a very great devotee. And he was so humble and so simple that he glorified his brother-in-law so much for giving him this opportunity to achieve this transcendental treasure of Krishna prema. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and immediately Sarvam Bhattacharya told Gopinatha Acharya to go to the Jagannath Puri temple and get a big piece of prasadam for offering to Lord Chaitanya. In this way, Sarvam Bhattacharya became a very, very sweet spoken devotee. And right at the same spot, immediately he composed 100 verses glorifying Krishna. And they are even appreciated and read today. So Mahaprabhu was overwhelmed with joy. And then, next day, early morning, Lord Chaitanya went to Jagannath Puri temple for Mangala Arati. And the pujari came and offered a maha garland to him and some prasadam of Lord Jagannath. And Chaitanya immediately remembered Sarvam Bhattacharya that I should go and offer him. Then he went to his house and he batted the door and called Sarvabhauma. And Sarvam Bhattacharya jumped off from his bed calling, Krishna, 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 he was calling. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard it, that he is calling Krishna's name. Just imagine how such a thrice caller has now turned into a great devotee. Then he offered him the maha garland and he gave him the prasadam. And Sarvam Bhattacharya, without any reservations, immediately gulped down the prasadam, what was given to him. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, oh, you didn't even perform your daily duties. How did you take the prasadam? So he immediately quoted from Padma Puran. Because in Padma Puran there is a statement which says that when you get prasadam, large prasad, even if you have not performed your daily duties, even if you have not taken your bath, even if you have not even washed your mouth, from wherever it has come, if large prasadam has come, even if it has come from a faraway place, even if it is old or new, fresh or whatever it is, one should immediately accept the prasadam without any reservation. So he quoted the sloka and he immediately accepted the prasadam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so overjoyed. So he said, he thought to himself how this dry logician who used to quote from Vedanta is now quoting from Padma Puran, and how he is so much absorbed in Krishna's devotion. So Lord Chaitanya said, my coming to Jagannath Puri, my mission in coming to Jagannath Puri is now fulfilled. I have converted such a great personality like Sarvam Bhattacharya into Krishna's devotee. Now I am sure my place in Vaikuntha is now reserved for me. So Mahaprabhu said like that. In this way, Sarvam Bhattacharya was constantly absorbed in devotion. Later on he wrote several verses glorifying Lord Chaitanya. One of the most famous verses is Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yogam Shikshartha Meka Krishna Purana Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari. He said, Lord Chaitanya has come to give Vairagya Vidya. This Vidya Bhakti is not an ordinary path. It's Vairagya Vidya which teaches true renunciation. So he condemned dry renunciation. Rather, he appreciated the Yukta Vairagya. That's why he says, Vairagya Vidya. This Bhakti path is called as Vairagya Vidya. Nijabhakti Yoga. That kind of Vairagya can be achieved only by Bhakti Yoga. As it is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam also. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu. Very quickly, what is born? Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahitikam. So one gets Vairagya and Jnan, which are actually called as two children of the mother of Bhakti. Bhakti is called as a mother, and Vairagya and Jnan are called as two children. So mother has to feed milk to them. So two children, Vairagya and Jnan, how do they thrive? How do they flourish? By doing Bhakti. By Bhakti only they can flourish. So in this way he glorified Lord Chaitanya and he became a greater and greater and greater devotee of his times. So we quoted just one example today. We can quote many, many examples to show how great dry logicians and great scholars who could give grammatical explanations, they all have turned into great devotees of Krishna if they won the favor of a Krishna's devotee. So sometimes you see such dry sannyasis also getting transformed into great devotees. Because ultimately everyone has to become a devotee. Bhakti Yoga is the last step. So I would like to conclude with this pastime today. Next week we will read between 7 to 12, the next lot of shlokas, where Krishna explains how should a karma yogi perform karma yoga, which is very important for us to know. 7 to 12. How should one perform karma yoga? That is explained in 7 to 12. So that we will discuss next week. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Actually, it is explained in Bhagavatam itself. It's coming. There is one shloka which explains about the Vedanta Shruti, which talks about that. But from the Acharyas in disciplic line, we understand that it was given by Vyasadeva. See, Vyasadeva gave all the scriptures some 5,000 years ago. We know about that. But how do we know that he gave 5,000 years ago? From the Acharyas only we come to know. So the same Acharyas explained. The same Vyasadeva has written this commentary for Vedanta. Because within Bhagavatam, there is a discussion between Narada and Vyas. Isn't it? There it is explained that Vyasadeva was completely dissatisfied even after writing everything. So he was told to glorify the personality of Godhead and be glorified. Actually, great scholars in India now, some great devotees who are called as Bhakti Vedantas. Like our Prabhupada is also called as Bhakti Vedanta. He is also a Vedantist, but he is a Bhakti Vedantist. So they took Vedanta and they also took Bhagavatam and they have given which verse represents which part of Bhagavatam. They have done that also. Like for example, Janmadhyasayataha, that represents which part of Bhagavatam. Rasavaisaha, which are the cantos and chapters covering Bhagavatam. So they have done a very good exercise. So today one can see a one-to-one relation also between Vedanta and his commentary. Any other questions, sir? Actually, according to mundane scientists, history cannot be known even beyond 1,000 years, I think. 1,000 or 1,500 years. Is there anybody from history here, background? Huh? Who? Yeah. Yeah, beyond 1,500 years, it's difficult for them to know. So like we talk about Jesus, who appeared 2,000 years ago, and we also talk of Buddhism, which appeared 2,500 years ago. So there are some very fine records, but they don't have any records. So material records are not available. So spiritual records are available. Well, like Bhagavad Gita, you may not be able to get the same verses in palm leaves eaten by ants. You may not get them. But they are now printed books. The Vedic knowledge is coming down in the disciplic line. Somebody will be processing it always. That is the most lost, and he will appear immediately. Say, what was the Puratana? The one shloka before. Yoga Nashta Parantapaya. Sakalena Mahata Tapa. So when the knowledge is lost, Lord himself will appear and give the knowledge. Bhagavad Gita is the same we see, wherever we see in the world. The shlokas nobody can change. They are the same shlokas. Yeah. Immediately you should grab it, because next moment we don't know whether we will survive or we will die. And it's very easy also, isn't it? It's very favorable to our desires. So you can accept it. No hesitation. So we should chant one time. My liking.
Favorable or the unfavorable, and just renounce it.
Oh Krishna, first of all, you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now, will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we were reading about Buddhi Yoga. Krishna was telling, one should perform Buddhi Yoga. The path which explains about how one should have transcendental knowledge mixed with Nishkama Karma Yoga, performed in devotion. So, Krishna was explaining about transcendental knowledge there, Buddhi Yoga. And later, in the third chapter, he was explaining about Karma Yoga. So he was explaining how to perform karma, how one should perform karma yoga. Later in the fourth chapter, what did we read? About transcendental knowledge. So two things Arjuna has been hearing. One is about working, that is doing action. Another one is achieving jnana or transcendental knowledge. So when Arjuna has been hearing the fourth chapter throughout, he was developing understanding that I should simply gather transcendental knowledge. by giving up all action. That was his idea. But strangely enough, at the end of 4th chapter, Krishna quoted a shloka. What was the last verse of 4th chapter? Yes, anybody can read the translation?
Wherever the doubts which have arisen in your heart, O Bandhara, should be dashed by the seat of knowledge. Arm with yoga, O Bharat, stand and fight.
So, Arjuna was developing understanding that I have to simply gather transcendental knowledge. And Krishna immediately put a bomb. He told him, now you have to stand up and fight. You have to work. This confused Arjuna. Actually, Arjuna is never confused. But he pretends to be confused so that we all can gain the benefit of hearing Bhagavad Gita and get a clear-cut understanding. So here, in the first verse, Arjuna is asking Krishna, you tell me clearly, Krishna, should I renounce everything or should I perform action? Be very clear. So one can understand when we read this verse that Arjuna feels action and renunciation are mutually exclusive. This is Arjuna's understanding. You have heard of mutually exclusive? Like you have set A and set B and they have no connection. So they are completely separate. Like in probability we talk of mutually exclusive. When you throw a coin, if you get head or you will get tail. Isn't it? So when you get head, it is exclusive of the tail. And when you get tail, it is exclusive of head. Similarly, he thought either one should do renunciation by gaining transcendental knowledge or one should do action. So Arjuna could not think of anything else between the two. So he was thinking work and renunciation are opposed to each other. But he didn't know that they are actually not opposed to each other. This is a very serious question that arises in the mind of everyone. Generally, even when we preach the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, many people ask this question. That means you have to give up everything. We have to give up everything. We have to go to forest or we have to go to Himalayas and we cannot do anything in society. So this question is there lurking in the mind of everyone. So for our benefit, Arjuna is asking this question in the very right at the outset of chapter number 5. So we have to understand this more deeply about action and renunciation. Generally in the material world, when we talk of action, action is binding. As Rishabhadeva explains, Nunam Samatta Kurute Vikarma Yidindriya Pritaya Apranoti Asadamanye Yatatmanoyam Asannati Kleshita Ashateha. He says, all the living beings in the world, please come in. Please, can you make some waves for food? All the living beings in the world are running here and there, busily, doing varieties of activities. And especially they are engaged in Vikarma. He says, what for? Simply for the sake of gratifying their senses. As we were reading earlier, just like how a fish, seeing a meat, piece of meat in the water, gets caught in a hook. Or just like elephant who has a sense of touch, who becomes attracted by the female elephant and becomes trapped in a hole. Like that, many examples are given for every one of the senses. Like the moth, because it's constantly seeing the light, it wants to enter into the light and it gets burnt up. Similarly, our eyes, nose, tongue, ears, skin, each of the senses are attracted to their respective sense objects. And the living being becomes victimized by wrongdoings, which he is not supposed to do. This is not necessarily to be elaborated, everyone understands this. Because that is the nature of activity in the material world. So, generally the actions in this world are binding. And what does a person do in the material world? As we were hearing earlier, as Prahlad Maharaj explained, 10 years of childhood goes away in bewilderment, next 10 years goes away in playing, last 20 years goes away in old age, and the middle, whatever period is left out, half of that years goes away in sleeping. Very little number of years is saved with a person. And even in that life, a person works very hard for developing himself economically and becoming stable in society. Or he becomes completely immersed in serving his dependents and relatives and friends. So in this way, all these actions are undoubtedly binding in the material world. So this is the reason why sometimes saintly persons leave everything and go to Himalayas, thinking that all these activities are binding. because living in society naturally entails involving an association with people, and one gets bound, trapped. Because for every action, there is a reaction that will be produced. So it is said, Avadhuta Brahmana says in the 11th canto, how the living being in his youth is exactly like a lushy green tree, which grows very beautifully and produces a lot of seeds. And when the seeds fall on the ground, it assures the growth of another new tree. And then this previous tree, it dries up. Similarly, in our youth, we perform so many types of sinful activities, due to which the next body is assured. It's made sure that you will get another 5 or 10 bodies, and then this body dries up. Because when you grow old, you cannot have the same vigor what you had in youth. So your eyes go into the sockets, ears don't hear properly, and senses become very weak. Although the desire for enjoyment may remain, it's not that when one becomes old, he loses the enjoying mentality. The enjoying mentality may be very much there, but a person has no ability to enjoy. Senses become weak. So, in this way, the living entity in his youth performs varieties of activities which assure one the next body. That is why it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Tadattam kurute karma, yadbaddo yati samsitim, yoni yati tadat klesham, avidya karma bandhanaha. It is said, tat artam, tat here actually represents the body. Tadattam kurute karma, every living entity in this world is working simply for the sake of body. Kurute karma, yadbaddo yati samsitim. He is saying two things about the body. One thing is that this body is binding you into this world, exactly like a cage binding a parrot. Like a parrot is locked in a cage, he is unable to escape. Similarly, the soul is bound in this body. Yad baddho. Yati samsritim. And also, samsriti actually means material existence. Material body means it assures that you will get material existence again and again, repeatedly. So he says, yoni yati dadat klesham, and he gives enormous pain, varieties of sufferings, due to two reasons. He says, avidya and karma bandhanaha. Avidya is, he discussed elaborately about it, ignorance. And karma bandhana is fruitive activities. Please learn these technical terms. Karma bandhana means fruitive activities. See, fruitive activity may be punya or papa. Fruitive activity is something which is material, which will bind you to the material world. So due to these two things, the living entity is again and again taking body. So that's how the actions are certainly binding. But the question can be asked, are all actions material? Is all the action that we perform material? All actions need not be material, because there are also spiritual actions like Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Mandanam, Archanam, Dasam, Satyam, Atmanivedanam. This ninefold path of devotional service, this is actually spiritual in nature. Simply by hearing, there are people who became liberated and went back to Godhead. Anybody can say example? Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj came to know that he is going to die in 7 days. So he went to the banks of the Ganges, and he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami. And he became liberated, and he went back home, back to Godhead. In fact, even before the Takshaka snake bird bit him, he left his body, even before that, and he went back to the kingdom of God. Similarly, for every one of these ninefold path of devotion service, there is an example. For Shravanam is Parikshit. For Kirtanam, Shukadevasamai. Smaranam, Prahalad Maharaj. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam. Padasevanam, Lakshmiji. Archanam, Ritumara. Vandanam, Akur offered very wonderful prayers. Vandanam is offering prayers. Vandanam. Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, Halimala. So, all these 9 people, they also performed activity. We can elaborately have one class on each of them. So, they all performed action, but did they become bound? They all became liberated and went back to Godhead. That is why it is said, Iha yasya harer dase karmana manasagira nikilashvapi avastasu jivan muktasa uchate. If one is engaged by karmana manasagira, 3 conditions, by one's action, by mind and by words, if one is engaged in Krishna conscious action, that means spiritual activities, then such a person, he is not bound by his actions. His actions are all completely spiritual. In fact, he is called as a Jivan Mukta. What is a Jivan Mukta? Jivan Mukta is a Mukta Purush. Although he is living in his body, he is already liberated. Just like if you take a big coconut and put it in the well, after some time it becomes cobra, you know, inside. If you shake it, you can hear a noise. You have done that, you have seen? You all have heard the noise of a cobra. Cobra means not a snake. Cobra means a coconut. So when it dries and goes inside, it is different from the coconut. Just like it becomes separated, even in Supari also it's the same thing. When it is green, it is sticking to the cover. When it is dry, it goes inside. Then you can see the difference. In the same way, his Jivan Mukta can clearly see that he is different from the body. And body is simply a covering. Now all of you can realize the fact that you are not the shirt which you are wearing. Is it difficult to realize? How easy it is. No? In that way, a self-realized soul realizes that he is not the body. So clearly he can see that I am sitting in this body. And at the time of death, when the death comes, he can leave the body. Like Bhishma Pitamaha had Ichamrityu. He left the body at his own accord, whenever he wanted. So this is the meaning of a Jivan Mukta. One who is completely liberated from the bodily platform. So such a person, because he is a Jivan Mukta, he gives up all the sense objects. Sense objects is tanmatra. For every one of our senses, we have sense objects. Like for the eyes, we have beautiful form. So one may think this beautiful form of one's wife is meant for one's enjoyment. Or one's ears, one wants to hear sweet sounds. Or one wants to taste delicious foods for one's own enjoyment. But such a Jivan Mukta actually understands that this is all God's property. Everything, for each of his senses, he sees them as God's property. So he understands that my wife, my children are all living beings, souls who are put under my custody, so that I can help them to become purified and I can take them back home, back to Godhead along with me. So this should be the consciousness of a husband. In that way, Jivan Mukta always sees everything to be Krishna's property. So he gives away all the sense objects to Krishna. Not only that, he gives away even the concept of proprietorship. The very concept of proprietorship. Prabhupada gives a very easy to understand example. Like, if you find a purse in the street, so a person may take the purse and see the money. There may be minimum 100 rupee notes. So he can enjoy with that money. He can go to a hotel and eat whatever he wants. He can enjoy with that money. Or another person may see the money and say that, oh, this is not mine. He can throw away the purse and go. And the third person, he sees the money and he finds out the identity card and checks for the address and delivers the purse to the respective person. So this third person is compared to the bhakta. A bhakta devotee, when he sees all the wonderful things of this world, he understands that I didn't create any of them. But certainly somebody has created them. So he finds out who is their personality. Then he understands Krishna is the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhu matta sarvam pravartate. Krishna doesn't stop there. Further what he says? Iti matva bhajante maam. I am the source of everything, my dear Arjuna. But my devotees know this truth. And they engage in my service. Whereas impersonalists do not know, he says. Devotees know this fact that I am the source of everything. What is the proof that devotees know Krishna is the source of everything? Because they are engaging everything in Krishna's service. That is a concomitant result. If you know Krishna is the source of everything, many people say, I have complete faith in Krishna. No, I know Krishna. Many people say. But what is the proof? Iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samandita. That is the key. They should be engaging everything in Krishna's service. Then it's meaningful to say that. So, in this way one becomes freed from the concept of proprietorship and gives away all the sense objects to Krishna. Understanding that they all belong to Krishna. So one of the most important part of our philosophy is to come to this point of realization that everything belongs to Krishna. It's very easy to say this. But it's very easily said, but difficult to realize this. Because we may preach this for hundreds of times, but if you have really realized this fact that everything belongs to Krishna, then we will not be able to do any sense gratification in this world. Because sense gratification, the very term, entails that one feels something to be separate from Krishna. That is something that one can enjoy, which is meant for one separately. So, Bhaswati Prabhupada used to talk this philosophy quite often, whenever he was talking to common people. Like some big businessman came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked him, what is your business? He said, I have iron and steel industry. Then Prabhupada said, you are a thief. I'm shocked. Who can say it so bluntly, directly on the face that you are a thief? He asked Prabhupada, why do you say so? And Prabhupada said, where do you get your iron and steel? He said, I get iron from the ground. And what do you do with that? Then he said, I put it in cupola, melt it, do get castings, and sell it, and I make money out of it. And what do you do with the money? Oh, money is necessary for enjoying in this world. Then Prabhupada said, that's why you are a thief. Because you have taken everything from God and you are enjoying it for your own self. Then he said, oh, then what do you want me to do? Yes. Because everything comes from God, you have to use it in God's service. Then he said, okay, then I'll give a part of my money for Krishna's service. Then Prabhupada said, then you are not a thief. So, thief means one who takes God's property and uses it for his own enjoyment. So, one has to realize this fact that everything belongs to God. So one can act but still not become bound. That is the art of working. Now on the other hand, let us see what the people on the path of renunciation, the Mayavadis, they are thinking. Mayavadis, seeing the nature of work in the world, they want to renounce all work. In fact, they don't want to do good work or bad work. You want to give papa and punya. Because if you do pap, we have to suffer painful reaction. If you do punya, we have to enjoy good reaction for that. You cannot escape. Either way, you have to, when you have positive and you have negative, both reactions have to come in your life. So they say, let us give up all action and become inactive. So when you are inactive, there is no plus, no minus. No pap, no punya. Then we will become liberated. This is their idea. So keeping this in view, they leave everything in society. They leave home, they leave society, they go to Himalayas. The secluded place, as Prahlad Maharaj explains. He explains, Prayena Deva Munayas Sagamukti Kaman Maunam Charanti Vijanena Pararta Nishtha Naitan Vihaja Kripanan Vimamoksha Yeko Nanyam Padasya Sharanam Brahmatonu Pashye. Prahlad Maharaj says, Prayena Deva Munayas Sagamukti Kaman Sva Vimukti Kaman, he says. Sva means one's own self. Mukti Kaman. Desiring their own liberation, such people, what they do? He says, Mukti Kaman Maunam Charanti. They don't even speak. They follow Maunavrat. Because if you speak, you may make some statements which may again bind you in the next life. So they don't even speak. They follow Maunavrat. Maunam Charanti. Vijane Naparartanishta. They go to the Himalayas, to forest. Na para artanishta. They are not working for the benefit of people in general. Pararta means for others, not for your own self. So these words are so simple. Svabhi mukti kama. For their own mukti, what they do? Monam charanti vijane na para artanishta. But Vala says, Naita andihaya kripana vimamuksha yeko. But my dear Lord, I don't want to leave everything. Because I speak to Dhammacharya in Hindi, Hindi is coming in my mouth. Naitan vihaya kripana vimamuksha eko. I don't want to be liberated alone, my Lord. Don't expect me to come to Vaikuntha alone. There are so many fools and rascals who are performing mischievous activities in this material world, carrying the big burden of Maya, Sukhaya, Maya Sukha on their shoulders, and I am not able to tolerate seeing their sufferings. So I don't want to go to Vaikuntha alone. So he says, Naitan vihaya kripana vimamuksha eko. I don't want to go alone. Nanyan padasya sharanam brahmatona pashye. Without achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, all the suffering souls have no other way to escape from suffering. So I want to teach all of them how they can become purified by taking shelter of your lotus feet. So Prahlad Maharaj, this is the mood. So following in Prahlad's mood, Prabhupada also was living in the city. He didn't go to Himalayas, he didn't go to forest. That's why one time Prabhupada's disciples were asking, oh Prabhupada, when you were in America, you were telling us about Vrindavan, about the beauty of Vrindavan. And we all thought that we can go to Vrindavan and live a peaceful life all the time chanting Hare Krishna, Radhe Radhe, like that, we can remain very happily in Vrindavan, 24 hours chanting the Lord's names. But now, we have come to Vrindavan, but we are building a big temple, we are running here, running there, working very hard, and preaching all the time. Prabhupada said, no, now you are youthful, you have a young body, so you should preach. And in your old age, you can go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, and you can simply be chanting Hare Krishna 24 hours. There is no problem. And then Kamalakrishna Maharaj asked, what did he ask? He asked, you said old age, what is that age exactly? How old should we become so that we can stop all our preaching activities and go to Vrindavan? Then Prabhupada said, that depends on individual to individual. As far as I am concerned, I consider myself not yet old. Prabhupada said, he was 75 years old when he said this. He considered himself not so old. So you just imagine. So even after becoming so old, such great souls, they always want to preach and give the message to people in general. So these impersonalists who want to give up all action, they go to Himalayas. They leave all action in the city and they think we will become inactive. But when they remain inactive, they certainly have escaped from material action. So it is like a stoppage of material activity. Try to understand this one sentence. Prabhupada makes a beautiful statement in Bhagavatam purports. He says, negation of mundane action does not lead to the understanding of a positive transcendental reality. So one may give up, negation of mundane action does not lead to the understanding of a positive transcendental reality. Because positive is different altogether. If one negates all the material activity, then one may come to the point of zero, of not doing anything negative. But one does not understand the positive, beautiful transcendental reality. So one has only successfully stopped the material action, that's all. We cannot even say successfully, because even when one lives in the forest or in Himalayas, still one may have to rub the hands or breathe. When breathing, so many germs are dying. While walking, so many living beings are dying. While lighting fire, so many germs are dying. So, five actions are there in Smriti Shastra. So they say that even if a person is trying to be inactive, still he will cause some action to be performed, due to which the result, whether a resultant reaction is going to come, and he will have to take a body. So on one hand, when they don't do any action like this, they stop all material activity, but the nature of soul is to be active. Soul cannot be inactive. Because it is said, nahi kachit chanavabhi jata tishthatya karma krit karyateki avashak karma sarva prakriti jaya gunai. Krishna says in the third chapter, he is saying, we read about it elaborately. Nahi kachit chanavabhi jata tishthatya karma krit. Nobody can remain inactive in this world, because the nature of soul itself is to be very active. We were giving an example. Anybody remembers the example of how the soul is very active? Sarvada is, he goes everywhere, all pervading. Yes, who can say? Somebody can explain loudly with a loud voice.
The boy
Yes, all of you heard it. Everyone could hear it. The example is, if a boy is put in a sack and they have the sack race, so even in that there are people who are getting first place, second place, third place. Some people go very fastly even inside a sack. But when you are outside the sack, you will be far more active. Similarly, the soul, Atma, now is in the sack of human body, and even now we are so active. There are people who are in India in the morning, America in the afternoon, isn't it? Somewhere, I don't know whether it is possible, but if it is possible, America, London, England, they come to India, they go to Germany, Australia. I have heard Jayapada Goswami Maharaj will be in three different countries within the same day. So there are people like that who travel to different places. Even while being in the body, we are so active. And if we are liberated, how much more we will be active? Just imagine. So Atma is very active. That is why it is said, in the spiritual world, nobody walks. Then what do they do? Dance. So every walk is a dance in the spiritual world. So the soul is very, very active. So this impersonalists, when they try to be inactive, that is not possible. Sir? Liberated soul. Soul has a body, spiritual body. He has a spiritual body which has a form and personality. And that personality and form is purely spiritual. Satchidananda. So this kind of renunciation cannot beget anything. In fact, Krishna himself rejected in Bhagavad Gita. Naham vede na tapasa na danena na chejaya shakya eva vidho drishtam drishtavana samamyata bhaktyadu ananyaya shakya aham evam vidorjana. He says, if one wants to understand me, there is no other way other than doing bhakti. One time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he used to do regularly, he was chanting and dancing in Shiva Sangan. Actually, Shiva Sangan was a place where all the great Vaishnava devotees would assemble together. And they would assemble for Krishna Katha and Krishna Kirtan. And one day, Mahaprabhu told all the Vaishnavas that our time is very limited. Why should we sleep in the night? Let us have nocturnal Kirtan, all night Kirtan. So right from that day, they all the very serious Vaishnavas who are very close associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu only would assemble that. And they would all perform Kirtan together. And that is considered one of the most ecstatic part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not allow any common man to participate in that Kirtan. One of the most elevated, exalted devotees would participate. So they would be singing and dancing all night long. So one day, in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing and he was dancing ecstatically, completely absorbed. Then all of a sudden he stopped and he called for Shiva. He asked, is there anyone besides the serious devotees here? Because I am singing and dancing, but I am not feeling ecstasy today. What's the reason? Is there anybody besides the devotees? He asked. And then all the devotees started looking towards themselves. They thought, I am actually a non-devotee. I have no devotion for Krishna. Because of which Mahaprabhu is not feeling any ecstasy. Because of associating with me. So they were all so humble devotees, they felt like that. And then Srivas came forward and he said, Mahaprabhu, I am very sorry. There was one brahmachari who lives in the nearby forest, who only eats the roots, who only drinks milk, and he leads a very austere life. And he requested me to permit you to participate in your kirtans. He wanted to witness the most beautiful kirtans that are performed in Shiva Sangam. So he is just standing at a distance from here. He is watching our dance. And Mahaprabhu became very angry. Call him here at once. Told him. Then Shivas went and brought the brahmachari inside. And when brahmachari came close to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu literally shouted at him. He said, do you think simply by drinking milk we can achieve Godhead? We can achieve love for Krishna simply by drinking milk and eating roots? That is impossible. Get out of here. You have no permission to join this kirtan. He scolded him. And brahmachari with folded palms, he immediately returned back. And he went out to the house. And again Mahaprabhu said, now all of you start kirtans. And they sang Hare Krishna very happily. They were chanting, dancing. And then after some time, Mahaprabhu again stopped. Because he could understand the mind of this brahmachari. He told Shiva, Shiva, go and call him. And Shiva again went outside and called for that brahmachari. So he brought him. So Mahaprabhu was observing that when this brahmachari went outside, what was his consciousness? He was feeling in his heart that although Mahaprabhu chastised me, I was at least fortunate to see him have a darshan of his beautiful dance. I am utterly unqualified, but these devotees are all very qualified souls. They have already achieved love for Krishna, but I have absolutely no love. So he was feeling like that. So understanding his humility, Mahaprabhu became so pleased that he invited him to join the kirtans. So in this way, Mahaprabhu proved two things through this pastime. One, he showed that simply by mere dry renunciation, one cannot attract God. Because there are many great sages, like Vishwamitra, it is said, he used to have 8 fires around him in summer. And in winter, he used to submerge himself in terribly cold water up to the neck and perform penance. So these penances are all performed whimsically by the candidate who performs these penances, although they are not recommended in the Shastras. In fact, later on we'll be reading that even the penances that we perform should be properly directed by authorities. So even after performing so much penance, he got so much power. But you all must be knowing, he created a Trishanga Swarga, due to which he lost much of his power. And again he performed tapasya and accumulated a lot of power. And he became a victim to the Menaka. And again he fell down. And again he performed a lot of penance and became very strong. And when Ramba came second time, he wasn't cheated by her, but he became very angry on her and converted her into a stone. So again he lost his power. So we can see this renunciates who may leave everything and not perform any action. Their heart becomes hard-hearted. They become hard-hearted. So such a dry renunciation is not at all appreciated by the Supreme Lord. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, simply by drinking milk and being austere, you cannot attract me. Because it is explained in the sixth canto, there are many ways by which one can become free from the sins of the past. It is explained, tapasa, by austerities, brahmacharyena, by being a strict avavat brahmachari, shamena, by controlling the mind, damena, by controlling all the senses, kyagena, by detachment, satya, means by avavat truthfulness, shauchabhya, by external and internal cleanliness, satya, shauchabhya, niyama, yamena, niyamena va, by following carefully the do's and don'ts, deha, vak, buddhijam, dhira, by body, and by vak means by speech. Buddhi means intelligence. If one is having a sense to discriminate properly and lead a pure life, dharmajna, shraddhayanvita, and one has a great faith. So with all these things it is said, chupanti agam mahadati, agam means sin. Chupanti agam mahadati, the sinful reactions are immediately eradicated by all these things. But how? Chupanti agam mahadati, venugulma mivanalaha, he says. Venugulma mivanalaha. Last part of this entire shloka conveys something that is very important to be known. Because it says, just like in a bamboo tree, at the bottom of which there are many leaves that are sprouting. So sometimes people burn those leaves. Although the leaves are burnt externally, the plant has got its roots down. What does that mean? Again, the plant will start sprouting, it will come up. What is the use of burning the top of a tree? Just like sometimes a gardener has a big scissor, he cuts like this for leveling. In the same way, if you cut a plant like this in the top, then the root is directly, it's again going to grow. Similarly, you may eradicate all the sins or the sinful reactions which occurred in the past, which have come along with you because you have performed them in the past. But what you have not eradicated is the sinful propensity. That means the tendency to commit sin, that is not eradicated. So, by dry renunciation, this is the stage that one achieves. That one becomes free from sinful reaction, but not from the tendency to commit sin. That means as long as you have the tendency, one is going to suffer. Just like a thief, he has committed some thievery, he is put in the jail, and he is punished. His punishment is over, but then he has the tendency to commit thievery. So he is going to do it again. And where is the end? This is the reason why a dry renunciate has to come again and again. So the example is also given. If you have a glass of impure water and by using a centrifuge you can settle all the dust down, then it looks like a crystal clear water. But if you take a spoon and stir it, then all the dust will come to surface. Similarly, Mayavadis are impersonalists who try to give up all action and go to forest. They apparently make their hearts very clear. Like we were telling the example of Saubari Muni. Saubari Muni appeared to have so much power that he was performing penance under the waters for several years. But then he was simply agitated by looking at two fishes mating and immediately came out of water and married many princesses. In this way we can see that the impurity is not eradicated, the impurity is just settled in a dry renunciation. So it can come up anytime. Whereas in the same canto, Shri Goswami says, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayanaha adham dunmantika snena niharam iva bhaskarah. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya, but one who performs bhakti, what happens to him? Vasudeva parayanaha, one who performs a parayan for Vasudeva. For him he says, adham dunmantika snena, just like there may be a lot of fog that is covering the entire sky, but when the sun rises in the sky, all this fog is dissipated. In the same way, all the sins, the sinful reactions, and the sinful propensity itself is eradicated when one surrenders to the lotus feet of Lord Vasudeva. It is said. So, this is the difference, that if one performs devotion and action, that is, one is performing devotion, along with that, if one is renounced, then he gets a great benefit. Actually, I wanted to show a chart today, which we will probably make next week and show you. The impersonalist has understanding that, like if you have two sets, set A and set B, he feels that these two sets are disjoint sets. Set A represents activity, set B represents renunciation. So he feels either you should be renounced or you should do mundane action. So he has given up mundane action and he is trying to be on a renounced platform by avoiding the society, by living in seclusion in the forest. So for him, his senses are not yet purified. So as Brahmaji said, if your senses are not purified, even if you go to forest, your six wives will follow you, he said. Who are the six wives? Five senses in the mind, they will follow you. So because he has an impure mind, again, unengaged senses and impure mind, we were talking earlier, what will happen? He can fall down. And because he doesn't know anything other than mundane action, naturally from that renounced state, he will fall down to which stage? The stage of mundane action. No, not just activity. If you say activity, that means you are not clearly defining. You should clearly say he will fall down to mundane action. Because he thinks these two sets are disjoint sets, so either he will be renounced or he will fall into mundane action. And this is clearly proved in the life of impersonalists. There are so many missions in India, and these people initially try to go to Himalayas and live a very pure life. But when they are unable to control their senses and mind, then they will come back to the material world, and you will see them doing very ordinary work like any other human being. Like they will set up schools, or they will set up hospitals, or they will be doing some social service. See, we are not against schools or social service or hospitals. We welcome them very much. But this activity is meant for somebody else, not a spiritualist. Please always understand, a spiritualist is completely different from a social welfare worker. Many a times in India, people think if you are having a spiritual organization, you should do some social service like giving food, giving clothing, building schools, and building hospitals. People think you have to do such activities. These are all completely on a mundane platform. They have nothing to do with God. These are very good activities. We can call them maybe pious activities. But they have nothing to give and take with God. They are purely mundane. When we talk of spiritual, spiritual means we should talk about the relationship between the individual soul and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who is God? Who am I? What is my relationship with Him? In fact, it is the most essential knowledge. Without knowing which one will be, just rotting in this material world, repeated birth and death again and again and again. The school may give you education till 10th standard or 12th standard, or even it may take you to the level of a doctorate. But then again, you have to be born. The ordinary mundane school cannot give you a solution how to escape from death, how to escape from diseases, how to escape from old age. So a hospital may cure your disease temporarily, but then what about the diseases that are going to come in future? So disease cannot be stopped. And what about the disease called as rebirth? Who is going to cure it? Can a mundane hospital cure it? That is the greatest disease called as Bhava Aushadhi. Bhava Saga. So we need a Bhava Aushadhi. For that we need spiritualists. So spiritualists should purely preach on the spiritual plane. They should not worry how many followers will I get. They should not worry. They should purely stand on the spiritual plane, and they should preach the pure loving relationship between the living being and God, and how to revive it. This is purity. And one should not fall down to the mundane platform and giving something material to people. But what do these Mayavadis do? They start many mission schools, they start many hospitals, they do many social welfare activities, but all these things are purely mundane. In fact, I have seen their magazines, they even write jokes, they even write riddles and everything, and they are so cool, not at all worried about the rebirth. That I am going to die, I am going to be reborn. And punaripijananam, punaripimaranam, punaripijanani, jatareshayanam, yahasamsare, bahutasare, kripyapare, pashamurare. Shankaracharya is praying, oh my Lord, this material existence is so vast. It's like a vast ocean. I am unable to escape from it. I am suffocating. I am repeatedly born and I am repeatedly dying. How many millions of mothers' wombs have I occupied? And it is a very painful situation here. Please save me from this ocean of birth and death. And place me at your lotus feet. This is this prayer. But not understanding this most important prayer, these people are very coolly doing mundane activities, as if death is never going to come. What a pity. So, in this way, those who are so-called renunciates, when they give up the path of renunciation, they have no alternative other than mundane action. Because they are thinking that action and renunciation are two disjointed. But what is the proper understanding of Vaishnava devotees? They know that they set A and set B. Action and renunciation are actually having an intersection. And that intersection is called as Yukta Vairagya. So how do we understand it? Yukta Vairagya means one engages the sense object, at the same time he is a Vairagi also. Renunciation. Like a devotee does not run away from society. A devotee lives as a part of the society. But he performs action purely in Krishna consciousness. As Rupa Goswami explained, anasaktasya vishayan, without becoming attached to the sense object, yata arham upayunjataha, he engages all of them in Krishna service. Nirbandha Krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate. Understanding that these are all connected to Krishna and they should be used in Krishna service. A devotee understands that. So this intersection of between the two sets, all of you have studied Venn diagram, you all know A and B intersection. Now you can imagine the intersection of A and B set. So B is only renunciation, A is only action. If you do only action, you become a bogi. If you do only renunciation, you become a tyagi. And if you are in this intersection period, you become a bhakta. You become a devotee. That means you perform action, at the same time, you are not enjoying the things, you are renounced from the worldly things because you are offering them to Krishna. This has to be very nicely understood. Now the next verse is very easy to understand. Second verse. So other verses we will not discuss so elaborately because most of it is covered. Second verse translation. Somebody can read the translation loudly.
The personality of God is different. The renunciation of birth and working devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, working devotional service is better than renunciation.
Yeah. So two things he says, work in devotion and renunciation. Both are good for liberation. But out of the two, which is better, Krishna says? Work in devotion. You see, if you are inactive, then you don't get any fruitive activities. Or if you are working but not attached to the fruits, it leads to the same result. You all understand this point? You are working, but you are giving all the fruits to Krishna. Or in the other case, you are not doing any activity. In either case, there are no fruitive activities. But still, Krishna says, which is better? Working and offering the fruits to God is better, he says. Why? Because that purifies the heart and also it solidifies the realizations. When one is working in devotion, gradually it purifies one's heart completely, even of the sinful tendencies, propensities, and it solidifies one's realization to be eternal servant of God. On the other hand, if one is only inactive, somebody may be really inactive. By going to forest, there are siddhas and people who perform very severe penances, and they may even become liberated and go to the level of Brahman. But Brahman also is not a stable stage, because the soul is potentially active, and when he is not given any activity, it is said, what is that? What is shloka? Arasya pichchena param padam tadaka patanti ado anadita ishmadangraya. It is said. Again, fall back into the same material mundane life. So when they leave the renounced platform, they come to the platform of mundane action. Whereas devotee knows action and renunciation have a common intersection where one can perform yukta vairagya.